Hey, it's Jeff. Thanks for downloading this podcast. And do yourself a favor, too. Hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app so you never miss an episode.
This is the Records and Rockstars radio podcast with Jeff Woods.
Sleepwalk, so fast asleep.
I'm Jeff Woods, and sitting across from me to share with you his insights and his memories and stories about art and music is a Canadian artist named Mark Behrens. Mark Behrens paints with oils, and Mark's passion is to paint natural surroundings, capturing light and depth to a level that finds collectors and art lovers, myself included, captivated and coming back to see his latest works. Mark is also profoundly connected to and affected by a Canadian band who, as much as any Canadian band, have truly affected countless souls, not only in Canada, but around the world where they toured. A band that more than any other has represented Canada and its landscape and its character in their music. Welcome to Wildwood's Blue Studio in the town of the Blue Mountains, Ontario. Painter, super fan of the tragically hip Mark Behrens.
Oh, Jeff, much too kind there, man. Thank you. And what a beautiful studio you've got here. It's quite entertaining to look around, that's for sure.
Well, you love history, and this house goes back to 1857, as I understand it. It's been all kinds of things, from a halfway house to a brothel to a ski chalet.
many uses, right? But a very good use out of it right now, that's for sure. When I heard you were up here in the community, it was eye-catching. I definitely remember listening in the 90s to you and following along, and to see what you're doing locally and promoting and supporting local artists. It's just great to see. So,
well, thank you, Mark. The thing is about, people say, well, how do you decide who to play and who to feature and who to talk to and what to post on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and your podcast and on the radio? It's like whatever feels good, like what feels right. What do you connect with? Do that. Mm-hmm. There's no agenda. Mm-hmm. There's no one saying you should, you've got to do this or you've got to do that. I got out of the corporate media world for that reason. I wanted to do what I wanted to do, because if it's not authentic and sincere, then why do it? Mm-hmm. Right? I can see that in your painting. We're going to talk a bit about that. Before you dive into the story of the immense impact of this five-man Canadian band that has affected you and your work and life, tell us where people can experience your paintings, your oil paintings.
Art's been in my life my whole... always. My mom kind of instilled it at a young age to always be creative. My oldest brother as well, Stephen, he went to Ontario College of Art, early 90s. So he definitely had the creativity in him as well. So I went to OCAD 96 to 99. I graduated in the 99. And
what did you study?
I was pushed onto the commercial side, so I took commercial illustration. I certainly still learned a lot, composition, all that kind of jazz, color theory, and I still took life painting classes on the art side every semester, that's for sure. I definitely enjoyed working with oil paint in my university days. I was set on that.
What is it about oils that attracted you?
The vibrancy of the color, I guess, how it mixes, to me, all the classical painters, You know, certainly Used Oils, you know, our beloved Group of Seven and Tom Thompson, Emily Carr, you know, all these kind of oil painting artists, and of course the Europeans as well, Van Gogh. You know, oil paint came from Amsterdam and the Netherlands, so you got quite a few of them in that coming out of that country as well. So,
your last name, Behrens.
Behrens.
What's the background of that?
Polish. My dad's Polish background.
B-E-R-E-N-S.
B-E-R-E-N-S.
And Mark with a K. Mark,
yeah.
Mark Behrens.
So my dad was Polish. He came from... Before the war, there were some hotels we owned, our family owned, so there was a Barentsa with an A at the end, hotel, and kind of a touristy, almost Collingwood-like town, where it was more of a summer town in Poland. So that's kind of where my name goes back to.
Were you born here?
Yeah, born in Montreal. So both my older brothers were both born in England, and we came... You know, my parents came to Canada in the mid-70s, and I was born a little bit later. My dad, he was kind of into computer sciences early, and that was much required in the 70s in Canada. So he found a good paying job here in Canada and kind of moved the whole family over. And I was born in Montreal, and we lived there till maybe 81, and we moved to Newmarket, Ontario. And Newmarket definitely plays a big role in the hip story I'm about to tell. So,
well, everyone has their reasons, be it the band they grew up with, the band they drank their first beers to, the band they saw the most in concert or bought the most albums by, the band whose stories of Canadiana most connect, the driving rhythm section, the searing guitars. I remember years ago how Gord Downie said that the secret weapon of the Tragically Hip was the backing vocals of Paul Langlois, which is a really interesting voice.
Maybe
obviously.
It was his hair, Paul's hair.
He's a hell of a good player.
I mean,
right?
I think the song that comes to mind right away is Ahead by a Century.
Illusions of some day, cast in a golden light, no dress rehearsal. This is our life. And that's where the hornet stung me. And I had a feverish dream with revenge and doubt. Tonight we smoke.
That sounds good. One of the Tragically Hip favorites of ours and a lot of people. Gord's presence on stage is probably the most renowned feature attribute for many people of the Hip. Obviously, you connected with it dramatically.
Oh, his theatrics were really what brought me in initially, especially... You know, hearing it through my brother. My brother saw the Hip many times before he passed. Stephen.
Oh, you have to tell a story.
And talking about his theatrics, Gord's theatrics on stage. You know, like my brother was, you know, big football guy in high school. Played, you know, he captained the defensive football side of the team. He played hockey. He had like friends everywhere.
Was this in Newmarket?
No enemies. Yeah, he went to Newmarket High. Very artistic, so he had his artistic side. Very social. He worked at Canada's Wonderland as well, so he had his Canada Wonderland friends. Like very, very outgoing, animated guy. And the Hip played a big role. It was. I can remember two mixtapes driving up to the cottage. It was a mixtape of Up to Here songs and Road Apple songs.
The first two big albums. How many years between you and Stephen, your brother?
5 years older.
Okay.
So he was 22, then I was 17. So
the quintessential kind of big brother scenario. 5 years is a lot, but it's not too much that you aren't, you know, in the same house and being affected by one another, especially as the younger brother.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I was, you know, it was... He graduated high school when there was no OAC year, so he was done in four. So by the time I started school, it was his first year at... at Ontario College of Art. So that 5-year gap just makes me think of that. But he was a big Hip fan. Like another roadside attraction. He went in 93, and I remember talking about that concert, and he was just revved up. Who's the Australian band? We're on that tour.
Midnight Oil.
Yeah. And they had that, the song came out, the Land song. They all kind of went in and did a charity song.
I was there.
Which I thought was awesome. Yeah.
I was there when they recorded that in Calgary.
Yeah. And so that was big talk. It was just tragically hip. I remember just the excitement of the album Fully Completely coming out. I remember the day just looking at the artwork, flipping it open. You're like, what is it? They're all photocopied on the cover. Their faces are all squished and one's eating a crab. And
it's a beautiful piece of art, that album cover, isn't it?
100%. But even the art of the videos. The videos for 100th Meridian, Locked in the Trunk of a Car, Courage, like the artwork. I remember coming home on a Friday knowing Much Music Countdown's on, knowing a Tragically Hip video is going to be on, and turning it on just to see the Hip video. Because it was a lot of that 90s videos, grunge rock, the videos were very artistic and creative. And
they were events unto themselves. If you were a big fan of a band, you really wanted to know how visually they represented a song that was on the radio.
100%. I think, and I'll get to it, but I remember wanting to meet Gord just to see he's human, just to see you inspire, you see these people, they motivate you, they make you want to be creative, but you're like, are they gods? Are they immortals? They're on our TV. What are they? And I'm always wanting to meet Gord just to see they were human. And the band, too. Sorry, I say Gord, but the whole band.
Tell me this, then. Full circle with your brother, Stephen. So, in his absence, you might not have had the same connection to the Tragically Hip. Was it his thing, and you kind
Absolutely.
Of...
Absolutely. You teamed on. You jumped on.
Right. And then what? What happened to your brother?
So my first Hip show was, we'll get back to the Newmarket thing. My first Hip show was Canada Day, July 1st, 94. It was in Barrie, Ontario. I lived on the northern side of Newmarket, and the event is on the southern side of Barrie. And when I tell this story, I think of three movies. I think of the movie Saving Private Ryan. I think of the movie Signs, M. Night Shyamalan's Signs. And I think of the movie Almost Famous because of the rock and roll youthfulness of that story. Canada Day, July 1st, 94, that was my first show. So getting the tickets 3 months in advance, the hype, the pump, you're there, you're waiting for it, And you go, and all three of my brothers, my other brother Brett went, my middle brother Brett, he was there as well.
Is he an artist too? What is he?
He's more on the business side. He's a business guy.
All right.
So he's been in the banking. He's worked for one of the Canada's banks for, almost 25 years. So
Stephen and Brett and you all went to that show.
We all went with our different friends, our different groups. We did not see each other. We leave the, events over. We're kind of home. I'm home in 40, 45 minutes. I'm just sitting. I go watch TV. Brett comes home 10, 15 minutes later. He's, hops in the room. We're talking. Stephen comes home like 20 minutes later. He's coming in the door. And we're all in the same room, and we're all chatting, we're all just loving it, we're all just pumped.
The aftermath of it all.
Yeah, like I just asked you about hanging out with David Bowie and interviewing him, and you talk about that high, and there's a bit of a high, right? It's your first concert, you're totally into it, and you're talking, we talked for an hour and a half, just talking about the show. Gord walked on stage, and he was a little upset, because people were throwing water bottles at Daniel Lanois, because they wanted the Hip. And Gord walks on stage, and he was a little upset, so he said something like, this isn't Canada Day, this is Friday. That's his way of telling the audience he was a little upset. But anyway, we had so much to talk about. This is the last moment me and my brothers are in the same room together, because, sadly, 18 days later, my brother Stephen was killed in a car accident.
Wow.
He was, he's on his way to work at Canada's Wonderland, and in the morning, and a kid coming the other way just kind of fell asleep and swerved into his lane and just kind of took him out. And, it's just to go from that high to that a mere 18 days later,
How did you?
It's just insane.
how did you find out about the accident? Who called you? Who told you?
I was painting. I had a job painting houses, so knew something was up.
How? How did you know?
I just get a little emotional, but...
How can you not?
I guess I went home for lunch, and the phone rang. And it was one of his buddies from Kenneth's Wonderland, just saying something's up. They're asking about Steve. And then didn't think anything of it. You know, you just go back to work. I just so happened to be painting a house around the corner. And then this woman just shows up. She worked with my mom. She just said, you have to go home. And,
so you did.
It's crazy to think about. Somebody just gone. You know, I'll wrap it back to the hip. I mean, this is, you know, the day my brother died is the day I picked up a guitar, you know? And,
whose guitar was it?
We, some of his friends, Newmarket buddies, had, had a campfire. And, one of the guys played a lot of hip. And we're just sitting there, very quiet. He's just doing riffs. And finally, I'm like, how do you do that? How do you do that? How do you do, you know, New Orleans is sinking. You know, how do you do that riff? And he taught me. And I pretty much learned there. And, you know, Little Bones. How do you do that? And you're looking at it. And this guitar is not a simple thing, but you're just kind of seeing quick little patterns, you know? And you're like, oh, okay. So right there, you're learning that. And then I learned Wheat Kings too, that night. Just simple.
Sundown in the Paris of the prairie, Wheat Kings of all treasures buried. And all you hear are the rusted breezes pushing around the weather vane Jesus.
Isn't it a perfect song?
Yeah.
Right? Well, there's so many of them. But.
So that's, you know, the hip is there. The hip is stitched in.
Yeah.
You know, before everything happens.
So tell me this. Gord became aware through you of Stephen.
Yeah.
How so?
I followed the hip many times, a couple American cities, interacted with Gord, you know, as they go to the bus after the show. I followed the hip to Europe. I went to Europe in 97. I just turned 20. It was March 18th. I just turned 20, and literally the hip were announcing we're going to Europe. On my 20th birthday, I emailed the hip. I just said, hey, I'm going to Europe at the same time. How do I get tickets? Blah, 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 blah. Can you help me out? And then they responded. And they said, yeah, just get in contact with the promoter. And they sent me the list of every show. Some of them had a little phone number with it. Some of them did not. I saw 9 shows in Europe. There was one free show. It was around May 4th. It's their national holiday.
The Netherlands.
Canada liberated them from the Nazis. And, you know, Canadians are huge. Anyway, so the hip headlined a show that day, a free outdoor concert. 2 days later, they played Amsterdam. I believe it was May 6th. 97. I did not have a ticket. It was the only venue that you could only walk into to get a ticket prior. So obviously I can't walk in. I couldn't call them. They wouldn't reserve me a ticket.
So you're standing there going, how the heck do I get in yeah. here, right? So what did you
do? So I went to the concert venue around 1:30 in the afternoon. I just kind of walk in. Beautiful venue. It was at the Paradiso in Amsterdam. Gorgeous venue. Art Nouveau everywhere. Art Nouveau was like vines kind of architecture and design. So everything was like these vines hanging down. Just gorgeous. And photos of famous people all in the front foyer tick area. So I walk into that area, the ticket area. And the new female tour manager, I forget her name. You might know her.
Was it Tristan?
Name. It must have been her.
Yeah, she's a lovely woman.
She'd only maybe just started that year.
So she didn't know you yet.
No, I'd interacted with her already. It was probably my 5th concert at that point. Maybe I'd seen her. She'd seen me around. I just walked up to her and I said, listen, I have some art for the guys. I meant to bring it. And I ran into Billy Ray on the train from Brussels to Amsterdam, and I went and showed Billy Ray the art, but then I left the art on the train.
Tell us who Billy Ray is.
Billy Ray is their tech guy, their main guy. He's been there pretty much from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Great guy, very hospitable to me and everybody else, all hip fans.
But you left the art on the train? What did you bring? What was the art like? Describe it.
Just this very illustrated animation of the band, and it's like Gord Downie's walking across a high wire, and the band's playing, and they all got animated heads, and their heads are enlarged. It's a very caricature.
What size of?
It was maybe 20 by 20 inches, and then it was a circular illustration. And
so you forgot it, basically.
I got it out. I showed Billy on the train. He bought me a beer.
Right.
And then I just, in the hurry of getting off the train, I left it. And he's kind. My hostel was close to their hotel. So Billy Ray, told me to hop in their cab, and I got a ride in the cab with Billy Ray to my hostel, which was pretty cool at the time, you know. So,
there, and you want in. You don't have the art you were going to give them. You thought that might be your ticket. It was obviously something you were going to give them as an appreciative fan, but it was also kind of your ticket to the...
Yeah.
I'll trade you this piece of art for a ticket to the
That
show.
Might have been it. I mean, I'd given a Gord art before. I gave him something maybe the summer before in
What did
Cincinnati.
You give him the summer before?
A quick little thing. I used to take, like, I took photography class in high school, so I would take photos of the band on the TV, and then it would create this kind of wicked look, and then I would take the photo and pose it maybe on some watercolor paper that I had washed different colors on, and it was kind of this portrait of Gord. It must have been... from the Grace 2 video at this point.
Were you able to give it to him personally?
Yeah, that piece personally the year before.
What was his reaction?
I'm not sure he remembered. Very grateful, very, very receptive. Just so happened one of his stage guys was walking by, so I got to snap the photo with him that day in Cincinnati as well. And...
Fast forward. Yeah. So now we're trying to get into a show we haven't got a ticket for.
Yeah, so I show up, I see her, I go straight up to her, I'm like, oh, I don't have a ticket, I tried to get a ticket, I had this piece of art I meant to give like you guys, and I left it on the train, and blah, 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 and she just said... She's just like, just wait one sec. And that was it. Just wait one sec.
She walked away?
She walked away. And I start looking at the photos. Like, it's blues legends on the wall. It's all these musician legend stars. I'm sure David Bowie was on the wall. And I wasn't looking towards the doorway where Gord was, but I remember just being 5 minutes, and then I turn and look, and he's there. And he's been standing there, you know, and he's kind of checking me out.
Gord's right there looking at
you.
Yeah.
So he's been checking me out. He's straight out of the... Back to the Head by a Century. He's right out of that video. He's got that hat on. Sure. He's got the dress shirt. And he's got his arms kind of crossed like this.
As he did.
And he's... I always found he was centered in the doorway. Like, you look at him. Every memory I have of him, he's centered in the doorway. I don't know if that makes sense, but...
I wonder how conscious he was of that position.
Yeah.
It's dramatic, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
So there he was.
So there he is, and I froze at first, and it went for like 8 seconds of silence, 10 seconds of silence, and you could see he's just kind of looking at me, not smiling, not cross, but just kind of a flat face. And then I just say, listen, I'll just get into it. And I just started telling them, and I just said, listen, I'm Mark, I'm the youngest of three boys, I grew up in Newmarket, and I tell them the event of that first concert, and I tell them about how 18 days later he's not with us anymore, and the impact, but it's like, where it goes from here is just insane. Like, this moment I have with Gord in this concert, a couple concerts later, like, it's just this... I'm a lost kid. I'm a lost 18-year-old, you know? And to have this moment happen of just pure euphoric joy, I don't know how to describe the moment.
So you're profoundly affected by the loss of your brother. You're in Europe to see the Tragically Hip on multiple dates. You meet Gord. You tell him this story. Then what?
Oh, it was unbelievable. I mean, when I tell him the story and get to the kind of the conclusion or the climax, he's instantly touched. He starts tapping his heart.
Yeah.
And he's like, Mark, you got me right here, man. You got me right here.
That's nice.
And from there, he kind of just reaches out. He puts his arm around my shoulder and he just starts walking me out. He's like, listen, we're really tight on tickets. We're really swamped. But don't you worry. You show up and you got you're coming to tonight's gig.
Good.
And it's funny, like a bit of just a side thing, one memory from that moment also is he starts talking about the free outdoor concert that was 2 days before. And he's going, wasn't that amazing? Just a free outdoor concert. And he's like, you know, me and the guys were talking and we're like, we should have a big free outdoor concert where we get all these corporate sponsors, corporate logos, blah, blah, blah. They're everywhere. And we have this little thing in the contract where they miss it, where the morning of the concert, all these charities show up and flood the logos of these corporations who paid us to put on this event. And we're just going to flood it with, you know, all these charities.
Meaning covering up logos with the logos of charities?
Yeah, yeah. So that's just a funny little moment. But, man, they let me backstage. It was awesome, man. I was just a lost, you know, I'm 20 years old at this point. A lot of Heineken going around. And
I remember drinking Heineken in 94 with the hit backstage in Edmonton.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that, was their thing, Heineken?
Maybe it was. I thought it was just, you know, they're in, you're in Amsterdam kind of thing, but they like their Heinies.
Apparently.
but no, it was, I spent the whole night, I walked home. I mentioned that my hostel was by their hotel, so I spent the whole, I closed the place down. I just didn't leave. I literally left with the band and walked back, and me and Gord gave me a lot of attention. Like, we talked and talked, and it was really cool to see him kind of put me under his wing and, you know, talk about art and being creative. And there's a couple quotes from other interviews, especially touring that for promoting the Fully Completely album, where, you know, he's like, I gotta make a career off my imagination, you know, and that's what I gotta do. And it's a trip, man. It's to use your creativity to make your money and pay your bills, and it's there's a bit of a gift there, you know.
It's a beautiful place to be. I mean, I'm not an artist, but I like to shine light on musical and fine artists, and to me that's a gift in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to have you come in and tell your story. And I have to tell people listening right now that Barter is alive and well, because you were kind enough to bring me an original painting that you did, and I'll post a picture on my Instagram. Go to jeffwoodsradio.com if you don't already follow me on Insta, and you can see a great shot of this particular framed art. Tell me about the piece.
In terms of the art itself, a quick, easy little horizon shot of Canoe Lake. So we all know kind of Canoe Lake and Algonquin Park and its connection to Tom Thompson and his life story. And so you got a bit of Canadian art history kind of going there. That's why I'm not one to kind of paint a simple horizon like that. But when it's, you know, a Canoe Lake, and it's the connection to Canada and the art world of Canada, it's definitely worth painting.
It's gorgeous, and the color is what got me. I walked into your gallery one day just to say hi. To see
there's some stuff. Vibrancy there. There's some vibrancy. Yeah. So I kind of, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I've got two young daughters, little Ashley Rose and Stevie Ray.
I love that.
And in the back of my mind, I always wanted to do a second style, create something different. I didn't really know what it was until I got a little stressed with, you know, having two children and the joys of that. And kind of just started experimenting in a way, thinking they can help me throw paint at the canvas brighter fluorescent colors. I didn't know where it was going or what it was doing. Sometimes it's an animal involved or something, you know, but I've really brought it back to landscapes and connecting it to kind of Canadian art history and the Group of Seven. And I also recreate maybe a bigger Tom Thompson painting in the same style. I call it Neon Wilderness, so I'll try and bring older paintings and recreate it in this newer style. But the frame, back to the frame, I got two of those frames I found on the side of the road. Somebody had just put it out, you know, to kind of get rid of it. And I picked up the girls from school. I was just walking home and I see these two frames. It's like, oh, those are free. So I just swiped them, and it took me a while to put that painting in that frame, but it lines up. Like, it's when you see it on your Insta, it's popping.
I love it. Well, thank you. Thank you immensely, because money doesn't have a story. Paintings artistic pursuits do. So thank you, Mark.
100%, man.
If people want to go and see your art, where do they go online?
I tend to promote primarily on Instagram nowadays, so that would be at Barons_gallery.
You touched on fully completely, and you touched on up to here, and you touched on Road Apples. What would be your favorite Tragically Hip record album?
Day for Night. Definitely got a little darker and
that's my favorite.
More creative.
That and Fully Completely are vying for number one in my sort of head.
Yeah, and then you want the rock raunchiness of the earlier albums, you know, the up to ears and the road apples. I mean, Bobby's guitar work on Up to Here, certain songs. I mean, wow, the speed of it, you know, some of his riffs.
And it's gritty, isn't it? But you know, so here's the thing. I don't know if I told you this in our few chats we've had thus far. It's 1988. I started at Q107 in January 88 in Toronto, and the first night I was on the air, it was 11 p.m. until 6 a.m., and then the morning show came in. So something called the hotline, if people aren't aware, when the hotline rings, it's a private line at the radio station that only, you know, a certain amount of people have, your All boss right. yeah. and your wife or your girlfriend and the sales manager, the important people at the radio station, have that number. But there's other people that tend to have that hotline number. Mm-hmm. And when it rings, a light starts going off like the cherry on the top mm-hmm. of a cop car, basically, mm-hmm. to alert you to the fact that, because you can't hear the phone ringing, you're at a radio station. Mm-hmm. There's no sound. It wasn't my boss. It was the manager of the Tragically Hip. It was Jake Gold.
No.
Right? A co-manager at the time. And I'm like, hello? And of course, I don't know who's on the other end. I just say hello.
You just gotta believe them.
You don't say hi, Q107. You just say hello because it's the hotline. If somebody got the wrong number, you don't want them to know that they got Q107. So he goes, hey, it's Jake. I go, Jake. Mm-hmm. He goes, Jake Gold, manager of the Tragically Hip. I said, oh, hi, Jake. He goes, when are the Hip coming up? So Up to Here wasn't even out yet. It was the previous album. Yeah. It had Last American Exit and Small Town Bring Down and
Highway Girl
and a few other songs. And I said, well, they're coming up in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. We had something called the Top 5, or it was a countdown of Canadian songs. And they actually had two songs placing in that countdown that night, Last American and Small Town Bring Down.
Wow.
So I told him they're coming up. I was congenial. I'm the new guy. I'm not going to argue. He goes, great, thanks. And click. That was our first meeting, as it were. Because years later, he would invite me to the house.
So what time is this phone call, sir? 1 a.m.
This would have been 11:25.
Okay.
He was always working. From 11 to 11:30, we did an international countdown. From 11:30 to 12, we did a Canadian countdown. So the Hip plays two times in the half hour.
Nice.
Years later, I told him about that. He didn't remember, or he claimed not to. But Nautical Disaster and all the songs on Day for Night struck me fairly dramatically in the depth of those songs and in the landscape of those songs. It sounded more like a U2 album in the best possible compliment I could give, because it was a pretty atmospheric record.
Oh, tons of it.
Compared to an Up to Here.
100%.
Right? Yeah. Beautiful record.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it makes me think of them on Saturday Night Live, right? They played the...
Did they do Grace 2?
I guess
too?
They did Grace 2 right. and Nautical Disaster.
Right.
I mean, it's the energy... It's you think of Gord, and when somebody passes, you always kind of see the last photo of them or the most recent, and you know, so you see a lot of the photos of Gord on his last tour there and stuff. And for me, it's falling back on those early 90s. It's falling back on those memories of the earlier Gord. Not to say it was less or anything.
You just connected more with it.
Yeah, you know, I mean. I went to about 25, 26, 20, I mean, 27 Hip shows, maybe. A lot of those came in the 90s, and when you're trying to be an artist, you know, your extra money to throw around in the early days of your career wasn't much, so I just remember seeing them on stage and just ripping it. There's one, if anybody wants to watch a couple good hours, go look up, and this was my second show, it was February 10th, 95. I believe that's the tour. Dave
Bedini from Rio Statics.
He wrote a book about being on tour.
On a cold road?
Yeah, and I'm positive he thinks that's one of the best hip shows ever in that book. It was February 10th, 95. I think it was.
What was the market? What was the city?
95 Maple Leaf Gardens.
At the Gardens.
Mm. So, cross Canada tour, winter tour. You know, they're all playing ice hockey every day, playing, you know, men's hockey pickup. They're all having fun. Dave's reading that book, and he specifically says February 10th, 95 is probably the best hip show he's ever seen. So definitely look that one up on YouTube. There's a great bootleg of it. It's a little shaky at times, but that's Gord in his prime. That's the band in their prime. That's kind of my strong memories of the guys. But
we touched on albums. Let's get to songs. It's tough, but I'll put you on the spot. 1, 2, and 3. Start at number 3. Your third. We'll get to number 1 in a minute. It's like a countdown. Maybe Jake will call on the hotline. You're going to play any hip? Yeah, we're going to do 3 songs. Mark Barron's favorite songs. You know the artist, Mark Barron's. He's got 3 favorite hip songs. Number 3 would be...
Oh, man. You're putting me on the spot here.
Why not? Yeah, it's my job.
Is that the phone ringing, Jake? I hear he's working with him again, so...
Right?
Maybe he's going to call. Oh, man.
You can't really go wrong.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, you go through phases, and suddenly a song pops up, and you're like, oh, that one. The upbeat, riffy stuff. I mean, I'll even go offbeat with... She Didn't Know on Up to Here, something maybe that connects the whole band with a driving riff, you know?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking the other day about I ask you for your top 3 songs in here. I'm throwing one in. What the hell? It's my show. It's our show this time. Remember Fight on Road Apples? Yeah. I don't want to fight. It was just like it had a groove to it.
Yeah.
And the radio didn't really play it. It wasn't a single as such, but I always like going for those songs that, I don't know, just had a groove.
So that song's about him, you know, they're at a bar in Louisiana while they're recording that album, I believe, and some guy's just kind of drunk and wants to pick a fight with Gord Downie. I think that's what that song's about.
I don't want to fight.
If you hear that song, there's some anger in it.
There's some tension,
you know,
for sure.
Like, get the heck out of my face. You know, I'm just here with my buddies playing pool, you know.
We'll wake up different right through our dreams. Another placid day ripples it seems. Do you think I bow? 'Cause I think you're right. I'm 'cause I don't wanna fight.
There it is. That's a groove for sure. Fight the hip. What else? Name another song that you connect with, and when it comes on, you can't help but turn it up and love it.
I think Grace 2. Maybe Grace 2 is just that opening bass, the kick drum, and
the build, right?
The build to it, the exit.
Then the bass line in that.
The secret rules of engagement are hard to endorse. When the appearance of conflict meets the appearance of force, but I can guarantee there'll be no knock on the door. I'm told.
Yeah, and the groove of that song. You know, maybe it's connected to these concerts again, but the two concerts I talk about at Maple Leaf Gardens, I mean, both of them, I believe, start with that
What a concert song. Starter, right?
Yeah.
Think about it.
So, yeah. So this, when they come through in 96, in December of 96, like half the shows started with the kick drum of Grace 2, and then the bass, the band comes out, and then Johnny matches up and then syncs up with the bass, and they start, and then half the tour they were opening with something else. So
tell us another one. What was your favorite story other than the one you told?
So my second hip show was the February 10th, 95. I'll go back a little bit. So I went to a show at Maple Leaf Gardens prior. I saw Blind Melon open for Lenny Kravitz in 93 at Maple Leaf Gardens. Me and my brother Brett. I went with my brother Brett. His friend Mike had an extra pair of tickets. Fairly wealthy family. They had box seats all the way at the opposite ends of Maple Leaf Gardens, opposite ends of the stage. So we watched Blind Melon up there. Shannon Hoon, he's whipping around on stage. But the sound is terrible. We were up there. You can't really hear anything. You can't get into it. And this is where I go back to the movie Signs, because this is implanted in my head. If you're up in the corners at Maple Leaf Gardens, it's terrible sound. We go down. We have box seats, so we can go anywhere we want with our tickets. So we make our way down. We make our way down all the way to the side of the stage. We can see over the side speakers, and we can see Lenny Kravitz like from pretty much the waist up, maybe a little lower. And while so the Kravitz gets on stage, out walks right in front of us Shannon Hoon and the guitar player. So I'm here with my brother Brett. We're front row beside the stage. I don't know what happens. I can't remember exactly. My brother patted Shannon Hoon on the head. He was leaning over, pats him on the head, and he's like welcoming him up. He's like, come, because when Shannon and the guitar player came out, they're kind of looking around. You could tell they wanted a better view to see Lenny Kravitz. And the speakers in front of them were up. They're down on the cassette, like, but where the hockey players are, I guess, hockey ice level, but we're up. So we can see them. We're overlooking them. We can see they're confused. We're trying to find a seat.
And they need to see Lenny better than they can yeah. currently see him.
So my brother, like, reaches over, pats him on the head, Shannon Hoon, and, like, waves Shannon Hoon to come and sit beside us.
Oh, so yeah, come get a good seat, right.
So Shannon Hoon and the guitar player come and stand beside me and my brother and Mike.
Sweet.
And watch the show. So this is where it gets instilled in my mind that if you have tickets in the upper corners, you're not going to enjoy the concert. The reverb by the time it gets to you. Second hip show, February 10th, 95. I go down with three girls from high school. We drive down from Newmarket. We hop on the subway at Finch. We get off at college. We're walking, looking for scalpers. All of them are like, want tickets. So when they're saying that, they want to buy tickets. They don't have any to sell. So we're walking along. We're like 50 meters from entering the venue. It's still in my head. I'm like, oh my God, my tickets were for up in the corners, right? So that's where our tickets were. I'm going crazy. I'm like, we're going to not hear anything. I finally see a scalper. I go up to him. I'm like, listen, man, do you have anything in front of the stage so I can hear it? He's like, yeah, all the way at the end of the rink. So I give him my ticket. I give him like another $30. I go to these girls. I'm like, go enjoy the show. I'll meet you across the street after. I get so many
across the street at the Golden Griddle.
Yeah, yeah,
that's what we did.
Yeah,
you go have a beer at the Golden Griddle.
Yeah. So I meet up with them back over there. So the whole time we're driving down, I'm like, I need better seats. So I upgrade the seats. I leave them. I'm going through the concession stands, and who do I see? Is my brother Steven's girlfriend at the time when he died, Chrissy.
Oh wow.
She is there. We're around where they're serving the popcorn area and stuff. We haven't looked at our tickets. We're like, hey, hug. Of course we're hugging. We knew we were going to the concert. We knew we were each going to the concert. So we run into each other. We're in the same section. We make our way to our seats. I'm two seats over from her, the seat I've upgraded to.
Which is incredible in and of itself.
And the two people in between didn't even show up.
Oh, perfect.
So I just moved over and sat beside her. So here I am. I'm going down. I'm freaking out because I've got these seats that I think I won't even hear the concert with, and I upgrade these seats. And here I am sitting right beside my brother's girlfriend when he died. And it's like, what are the chances?
The universe provides.
I told another kind of somebody in publishing this story, and he's like, he says that, he's like, it's as if the universe was just talking to you.
Right.
You know,
it does that when we're lucky.
Yeah, when we're lucky, when we're lost,
you know, when we need it most.
I think that's why I want to tell this story, man, because, you know, you just see a lot of people who need hope right now. I don't know how to explain it. Like, you just see the looks on people.
You're right. Here's the way I look at it, much the same, is that I'm fortunate. I have work, I have family, I have love. And I feel really lucky. I feel lucky to have the basics, a roof over the head and food in the fridge, right? Mm-hmm. And the heat works and the plumbing works. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty good compared to a lot of people in the world. That's, you know, hashtag Ukraine. And a lot of other places in the world that aren't as prevalent or pronounced in the news, but there's strife all over the world at any given time.
No.
I think that if I'm a reasonably well-adjusted guy, with all of these luxuries, I think they're luxuries. A luxury isn't a Porsche or a Mercedes. It's, to me, a luxury is clothing and shelter and food and friends and love. What about the people that are marginalized for whatever reason? Mental health issues, lack of money, abuse, whether it's sexual or physical, or there's a million reasons to be on the outside, an outcast, someone suffering. And COVID only made that more pronounced for a lot of people because of isolation and because of lack of income. And the other group of people, maybe you have an example of it, that I feel the most hurtful about and the most empathetic towards is the people that were and are in the last years of their life, either conscious of that through terminal illness or not conscious, just getting to that age where they're going to make their exit. How sad to be a man or woman in your senior years, unable to see your kids, grandkids, friends, relatives, family, because you're isolated and you're not supposed to go anywhere and you've been mandated to lock down and you exit alone? Or you got sick and you're in the hospital and no one can see you, and therefore you exit alone. It's heartbreaking, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. What's going on? I can't imagine what some people are experiencing. My parents are out in Nova Scotia. They're on 6 acres. They're kind of isolated a bit, but they're getting up there in age, and they certainly have some health concerns, and I haven't seen them. I mean, they haven't seen their granddaughters in this whole time here during the pandemic. So, you know, I'm still a part of a family that kind of, that deals with loss, you know, from the loss of my brother, and I think of a little family unit as maybe something with a bunch of moons wrapping around it. So I'm one of the siblings. I'm a moon. My brothers were moons. And once my brother was lost, you get a little wonky. You're like a UFO wobbling out of scene in an old Star Wars movie. You just kind of, and you're off kilter. You're out of orbit. You're not, you know, you're out of that life you were living. So, you know, you've lost a key part of your family, so
everything's changed at that point, right?
So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of anger in a young 18-year-old kid who's just lost their older brother. And maybe this inspires, like, TED Talks of hope. I don't know. I think everybody's got stories out there, and when I think of it, it wouldn't happen today. What happens to me over these three hip shows, technology gets in the way, scanning of cards, you know, all these things happened before cards were, or tickets were scanned to get into the venues. So things happen in everybody's life, like signs from lost ones, people who have left. People always talk about signs.
Mark, what would you point out as a sign that you knew was coming from Stephen, from your brother?
I would say this third concert I'm about to talk about, it's insane how I end up in the seat I do, who I'm sitting beside, and what Gord says. This is December 13th. It is a Friday the 13th. I do not have tickets, okay? I'm going with a bit of a date. Her name is Jelana Elizabeth Stewart. We met at arts camp. I was on the arts side. She was on the drama side. She is a 10 out of 10 gorgeous, creative woman. She's an actress. She's in LA now. You can look her up. She's very creative, and she's a quick thinker on her feet.
Say her name again.
Jelana Elizabeth Stewart. Jill Elizabeth Stewart. Maybe you can find her that way. But she's been in movies here and there, married a famous person, has an awesome daughter and stuff, so she's doing well. So she was my date. I did not have tickets.
Does she know at this point that you don't have tickets? Are you bluffing your way through
this? I might have bluffed my way.
Come, I've got tickets.
Yeah, exactly. Come along. Yeah, so she lived in Aurora. I drove down from Newmarket. Same thing. We drive to Finch. We take the subway down. We have fake ID at this point. I'm still 18. I think she's 17. She had a cousin's fake ID. I had my brother Brett's fake ID. So we're sitting in the bar. We're sitting there. We have a pitcher of beer. It's like 10 minutes before the show. I'm like, oh, fuck. I got to go with tickets here. I got to go buy something.
Right? Oh, yeah. I don't have tickets to this show.
We met up with a buddy of mine, Stefan, and his girlfriend. So he was there with fake ID, too. So I left Jill with them, and I go out looking for scalpers. And I'm just like, two tickets. Who's got two tickets? And I finally get this guy. And he's like, I got two tickets, but they're not together. And I'm just like so dejected right away, like, oh man, like, oh, whatever, give them to me, we're going, at least we're gonna get in.
I'm in the hottest date of my life, you know, and I have a ticket not with her. Well, that sounds like hell.
Not a good time.
Then what?
So I go back in, and I remember just being a little dejected. I sit down. I'm like, listen, I got his tickets, but they're not together. And I remember her just reaching across, and she puts her hand on top of my back of my hand, and she's calming down. She's like, don't worry, we got it. That's all we needed. So we go to the venue. We walk in. One thing that happens, this is one of the obstacles, okay? And I didn't even realize it till after Gord's death because I'm going through all the stuff. Here I am almost 20, 24 years later. I'm going through all my stuff. The scalper gave me one ticket for the Friday the 13th. The stub was ripped. He retaped it on. So I believe he did that as a distraction because the other ticket was for December 12th. It was for the night before. So he was trying to scam me.
So now what?
Oh, so we're going in, okay? And I swear this happens at the exact same time. I go to hand the ticket woman the tickets to go through the turnstile. And at the exact same moment she places those tickets in her hand, I swear to you, the kick drum for Grace 2 starts. That exact moment. There's this sense of everybody kind of stops and it's like, oh, the concert's starting. She's kind of like looks around.
The ticket lady.
The ticket lady's like looking around, reacting to everybody suddenly rushing to get into the arena section. So I assume this is where she maybe mixed it, right? So she gives us her tickets. Jill grabs me by the hand.
Hot date grabs you by the hand.
Hot date grabs me by the hand, and we go straight in. We go straight into the arena. We pass the usher. He's rolling his eyes. He's like, oh my goodness, I got to chase these little punks, you know, and kick them out. We go down. We go flight after flight after flight. And Maple Leaf Gardens, it was the gold section, was maybe 10 seats, and then it was like the red section. I assume we made it down to like front row of red. Because by then, Gord Downie's head's probably like maybe feet high kind of thing. So we're fairly close. And we're right beside the stage. So the sound is perfect. She starts shuffling her feet. She lines up with a couple guys. She starts shuffling her feet like, let us in. And slowly she just shoves them over.
Because she's so hot.
Let her in. So we're standing there suddenly, and the usher's right there. Like, he's tapping me on the shoulder. Yo, I got to see your tickets. Hey, I got to see your tickets. I'm just shoving. I'm like, we're here. I thought I showed them to you earlier, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, if you don't show me your tickets, I got to get you out of here. I look over at Jill, and she's looking right into my eyes. And she has talked the two guys into giving her the tickets that they had. And she is now handing me their tickets.
To prove that you're in the right
seats. To prove that we're in the right seats. And the usher was amazed. He was in shock. And right. He's like, wow, okay.
Oh, all right.
And he hands the tickets back, and we are set. We are there. This is us. And unbelievable to see her confidence, to see her, how she took over that moment is just, it's such a memory.
Women can save us sometimes, can't they?
100%. 100%, man. And so back to the show. We get to our seats. We keep our seats. The usher takes off. Very quickly, I start recognizing the guy sitting in front of us. Very quickly.
Oh.
And I'm like, well, I can tell, but he's right in front of me. And within four or five songs, Jill left to go to the bathroom. So me, being the guy, I shove over beside the guys, right? So I move over into her spot. So I don't want her sitting beside these guys anymore, right? So I move over, and who do I see? It's my brother's best friend from his days at Ontario College of Art. His best buddy was an artist, a landscape artist, well known, much bigger than me. He'll like hearing that. Peter Rotter. There's an artist out there named Peter Rotter who took off in the 90s. Huge Canadian artist, and he was there.
What are the chances, right? Again, the universe playing with you and
100%.
For you.
Like, we're taught, like, he was one of the pallbearers. So he lowered my brother into the ground.
Oh, boy.
You know? So.
And what was the capacity at the gardens? I can't remember. It was a hockey arena, so.
For a concert, 20,000.
Yeah, closer to 20K.
Like 20,000.
And of all the people sitting in front of you, it's a pallbearer from your brother Stephen's funeral.
It's just insane. And you start thinking these things. And you're like, wow, I ran into Chrissy, and here's Peter. What are they, like, holy moly. It's like the next, who else from the funeral is going to be here? Like, holy crap, man. And then, you know, Jill comes back, and this is the moment that is just simply insane. And
what?
I want to describe the visual of it, and it's kind of offensive, and I don't want to offend people. You mentioned Ukraine. We're seeing a lot of bombs go off, and... You know, you have this moment happen with Gord, and he says it on stage, and it's like the bomb going off, and then it's just the visual impact of it coming at you.
What happened?
You know, like this aftershock of boom.
What did he say?
What the heck just happened?
What happened?
So, a couple songs later, the sixth, seventh song of the concert, it's Nautical Disaster. And we all know what Nautical Disaster is about. It's about death, it's about loss, it's about drowning, it's... You know, a lot of emotional stuff. And there's the lines, anyway, Susan, if you like the conversation, so faint a sound in my memories, I can't think of it now. But Gord, I mean, Gord changes the name Susan to Stephen in the concert.
Why?
I don't know why, man. Is that, we talked about, is that Stephen talking to me? Is that Gord talking to me? Like, it's insane. And it's the most euphoric moment. And I use it as an energy source, man. It's, I was such a lost kid. You know, you're this lost, miserable kid. You've lost your best buddy. Your oldest brother's been killed in a car accident. You know, not his fault. And you're this lost kid, and you have this moment, and Gord changes the name Susan to Stephen. After you're standing beside a pallbearer by chance, after you've sat beside his girlfriend by chance, it's
all of it.
I don't know how to say, like, it's just, you're just in a shock in the moment. I remember just being like there, like like you're underwater, and I remember looking down at Pete as if he would look at me and be like, man, Gord just said Steven, you know. And I remember looking at Jill as if she would react too, and she just kind of looked over at me and gave me a smile, but she didn't hear it.
No one connected with it like you did.
No.
In the entire room of closer to 20,000 people.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, other people probably had their own stories somehow that resonated, but nothing quite like yours.
100%. It's just these layers of events, and it's like I just get chills when I think about it.
Still,
know.
Yeah.
And like I said, you don't know how to explain that moment. Like, was the universe talking to you? When Gord was given his name, the man who walks amongst stars, Wakapi Omani, is how you pronounce it? Wakapi Omani. I was like, yeah, no shit, man. Like, that guy does walk amongst stars, you know? He was talking to me from stars in 95, 96, you know? Like, it's just this moment I use, and it's like this little battery that I just draw so much energy from.
These stories, do they factor into your oil painting somehow? Do you sit there and think and find yourself lost in some of these memories and moments?
I heard an NBA player tell a story recently, 5 years ago on the radio. He was inspired to be the best basketball player because he lost his brother, older brother, in a tragic event, and he was inspired to make his name famous. And to me, when I heard this basketball player talking about that, I connected with that. I think that's, you know, I'm trying to make my name famous for the sake of my brother, for the memory of my brother, if that makes sense. And you commit to that. And you have a credit card in both your hands. And you survive. And you hang in galleries here and there, and you sell a painting, and you move on to the next, and you pay off that credit card when you got a chance, and you just go and you just bunker down. And you have these memories of these events that are so impossible to have happened, you know.
So I tell
Gord the story in Amsterdam.
How much time had passed then between when that happened and when you're telling Gord the story?
So December 13th, 96. I'm telling Gord the story May 6th,
97.
Okay. So it happened pretty quick. I didn't know I was going to Europe to tell Gord this story. I didn't know. It just started coming out when I had that one-on-one.
So, Gord, so hey, Gordy, baby.
Hey, Gordy, baby, you know exactly what you mean. So let's...
we'll come back to that. Put a pin in that. Go ahead.
So after that show, I took a little break. I think the band went maybe a little bit north in the Netherlands and played a couple shows. So I was like, let's just bunker down in Amsterdam, check out, you know, the smoke shops and stuff like that, and maybe some other places too. So I probably saw the band again maybe 4 or 5 days later. It was in a very small venue, very similar to Lee's Palace. But the stage was like below your knees. Like it came up to your, like below your knees.
You're practically standing on stage with the band, right?
So maybe 150 people in the whole venue. Uh-huh. I'm front row. Gord walks down stage and he kind of makes eye contact with me and he sees me. And he's like, oh. And he kind of gives me a little, not a wink, but a little, hey, you know, a little head nod. And, you know, a cool little acknowledgement of me, whatever. So he goes on, and sure enough, 6-7 songs in, Nautical Disaster comes on, right? And we're going into it, and they're performing. I got my camera. I'm kind of looking all over the place, right? And I remember I was looking over at Bobby Baker, and then he does it again. He changes the lyrics. And he goes, anyway, Steven, if you like the conversation. And I look over at Gord, and he's completely crouched down. I wish I can just kind of show you. He's crouched down. And he's just looking at me. And he's looking at me with this energy of like, you got it, man. You know, you're going to do okay. You know, like, and he gives me a little wink. And he just goes off into being Gord again, you know. And I'll just remember that forever. And just that little thing he did, you know, even just for me in that one moment. And I did run into him again in 97. It's the last time I saw Gord. Horseshoe Tavern, Queen West, 50th anniversary party. I lived at like Beverly and College, at this little place, and I was watching the Leafs games. Back then, Leafs games were like on City TV even. So the game went from the Leafs game to City TV, and City TV starts with the Horseshoe Tavern 50th anniversary. It's freaking Gord Downie on stage singing. I'm like, man, Gord's like right around the corner. So I pack up my gear. I go down there. I start figuring out what to do, right? I'm like, how do you get in? Blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to get by the bouncers. Not much of a lineup. I don't even know what I'm doing, right? The same thing as Amsterdam. I'm just showing up. And some guy comes out. They were giving out a little keychain with a little horseshoe on it. Yeah. So that was acknowledgement that you were allowed to get in. So I didn't have this keychain. Tried going around back, came back forward. I'm like second, third year university, so I'm still a kid. And I'm standing there, and I'm just kind of waiting. I must have been there half an hour, 45 minutes. And finally, like, one of the bouncers just winks at me. He's like, just go in, you know? So I start walking in, and the other bouncer didn't realize he winked me in. So he goes to stop me, and he's like, just let him in, whatever. He's not going to do anything. So I go in, and I'm just walking around, and Johnny Faye's on drums. So I saw Johnny Faye right away. And I knew at the Horseshoe, there's the green rooms are downstairs, right?
Sure.
I had a beer. I walk around. You know which the big green room it is. So you figure he's in there. And I didn't go in. I didn't have the courage. Go go up. I have another beer. I'm just about to finish my last beer, I swear. And I'm up close to the stage. And I'm in between kind of the bar area and the side of the stage. And that's where guys go down into the green area, yeah. The green room. They go into the basement to the stage that's, or the stairs that are on the left side.
Yeah, the other stairs, yeah.
So I'm literally thinking about packing it up. I got maybe two swigs of beer left. And up comes Gord walking up the stairs. And that same thing, it's like he was centered on the stairway coming up. And he's coming up, and he's walking, and I'm looking at him, and he's coming, and he's walking by me, because he's going to walk out the front. And I'm right in between the stairs and the front bar, and he walks by, and he goes to kind of look at me, because I'm kind of in the way, like, I'm not in the way, I haven't moved. He's just walking, and he looks at me, to kind of, and I move, and he realizes it's me. So he kind of pats me to walk by, and he sees it's me. He's like, oh, Mark, hey. And we start chatting. He's like, hey, listen, I got sick kids at home, so I really got to get going. But hey, man, thanks for that art. I sent him some more art during another roadside attraction. And, you know, he's like, how's school going? You know, he knew I went to OCAD, and we're talking. And it just kind of went on for a bit. And finally, I was like, Gord, man, you got to go. You got sick kids at home. And I just patted him on the shoulder. And he kind of patted me on the shoulder, and he gave me a squeeze.
Nice.
Like a little squeeze, and right. He didn't say bye, he didn't say thank you, you just saw the thanks in his face,
sure,
for letting him go and not having to keep chatting, you know, that kind of thing. So, and that's the last time I saw Gord personally, and I just kind of watched him walk out of the front of Horseshoe Tavern Bar.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Yeah, cheers, man. Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, likewise, thanks.
Records and Rockstars radio podcast is available every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe for free through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your streaming audio, so you never miss an episode. Rate and review to help us spread the word. All this and more at jeffwoodsradio.com.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many rogues that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.